is, isn't it? Let's welcome back to our program local state representative Paul Tacak.
Well, thank you, guys. Great to see you.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Well, I always say it's nice to be asked to go somewhere, but it's always better to be asked back.
There you go. Yes.
Well,
that's a fair point.
And that is, and after the event of yesterday, I mean, we've disagreed on some issues on prior programs. I love having you on the show because I like having that debate.
Amen.
You know, not just with somebody. Oh, yeah, I agree. Sometimes I like to talk to somebody. Well, I think this. We need a little bit more of that, but that's a personal opinion.
I would agree with that, too.
Lots of things to talk about, but let's start with that, all right? This event yesterday, you had a comment that I think I saw in a Center Daily Times story last night or something, a reaction and so on. So let's start with that, your reaction to yesterday.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear, and my statement, I hope, was really clear. I said, nothing can justify the shooting of Charlie Kirk, and that political violence is always wrong. It should have no place in a free and a democratic society. And then I said, I'm praying for his family, and I certainly hope that his killer is brought to justice with no further loss of life. I'm reminded, and it's 9/11 too. If we think about the synergy of these things together, but I will also note that, this isn't the first political violence we've seen even recently. Over the summer, the Democratic Speaker of the House of Representatives in Minnesota was ambushed and assassinated along with her husband, which, by the way, look, I'm a public figure. If you have a problem with me, come after me. Do not ever come after my family. Do not ever come after my friends. They didn't ask for this. I did. But we've seen this. We've seen assassinations. We've seen shootings. It's absolutely intolerable. That's not the way we're supposed to solve problems in this country.
Are you concerned right
sure
now?
Sure I am. Yeah. I'm worried about security, obviously, for my family and especially for my team. Look, they're young people who are trying to do good in the world, and they work in the office, and I want to make sure everybody's safe. I think we're all thinking that. I also believe that I have an obligation to be a public figure and to speak my mind and to engage with people. And I'm not going to cower in a hole. I'm going to be out and talk with folks. I think that's the right way to do it. And I think that's what honors the system. I think that is what our system is built, not on absolute power, not on absolute certainty, not on somebody who fundamentalists believe that they have all the answers and that everybody else is wrong. That's not the way our system was built. I don't think that's the way we are as people. I think we're all multidimensional. We have to find ways to work together, and we have to find ways to compromise. And unfortunately, in this day and age, that doesn't sell. It doesn't sell on social media. It doesn't sell in mass media. It doesn't sell in politics. And frankly, it doesn't sell even personally in personal relationships anymore. Everybody feels that they have to be purists and they have to be extremists, and it leads to violence. I fundamentally believe that's not who we are. And if we are, that's not who we should be. And we have to look to, as Lincoln said, our better angels to find a way to live together, because surely it will be intolerable if we can't figure that out.
All right.
Amen.
I stepped on you on that question. Go ahead, John.
One of the things that is just troubling is not nearly a strong enough term, but it the idea that we can't just have a discussion, and at the end of the day, I was just going to say, when you said come after me, I understand what you were saying. How about we not come after anybody violently. Again, I don't think that's where you were going with that. And but come at you with the ideas, with the counter ideas. There is just something beyond reprehensible that we can't have a passionate argument. And we can be passionate. I mean, I have a very strongly held set of beliefs, and I really believe that's would be the right track for the country. I have friends who are very passionate on the other end, and it has never even occurred to me to, like, punch them, let alone bring out it's like, no, I think you're wrong. And now let's go have a beer together and listen to this music. And I don't know why we can't be passionate and also recognize that, yeah, violence is, that's an insane way. And that to me was the power of Charlie Kirk from our side of the aisle, was that it was all about ideas. And he was willing to go, like he jumped at the opportunity to go to groups of people that vehemently disagreed with him to see if he could persuade them. And in some cases, I think he genuinely did. And in other cases, I think he solidified the beliefs of folks that were on the other side. But why we can't just have a discussion. And again, if there's somebody out there with a set of beliefs that you can't stomach, then don't go to the rallies. Turn the channel. Don't listen to the speech. If it is going to get you that worked up, you do have the power to not watch or listen. Again, we have free speech. We also have the freedom to choose what to not hear. Now, my preference would be, yeah, listen to everything, take in everything, figure out where your position is. Occasionally, maybe you know what? I've felt this way, but after hearing that discussion and reading a little more about that, maybe that is an area where we could back off on, or figure out an alternative route where both sides could agree. I just there is something just so wrong with thinking that because of somebody's beliefs, you need to eliminate them, or you're okay with them being eliminated. We just have to be better as a people.
I agree with you. I mean, I think it's really interesting to see the outpouring on one side versus another. I mean, I'll tell you, last night was scary, because if you went on social media, you saw the richest man in the world, until recently, say that the left, just not even defined, is the party of murder. This is war. Shut down, defund, prosecute every single leftist organization. I mean, the reaction, Laura Loomer and all of these other people who are out there spreading hate and fear and division. The reality is that there are people who benefit from dividing us. I've said it before. I say it all the time. They earn their living doing it. They get their political power doing it. They define themselves by who they hate, not by who they're for. And they will label Americans and divide us. There is so much more that unites us than divides us, but you would never know it by looking at these people. We need to speak with one voice. I was very gratified to see that all of the folks on my side of the aisle, all the folks in the, quote, left, deplored this. I will tell you, I was really disappointed in the silence after Minnesota. I mean, you know, we have to be consistent.
We might want to do a little more digging before you say all on the left.
Well,
did you see MSNBC's coverage yesterday?
No, because I don't.
Yeah. I can just assure you, it was not all on the
left.
Well,
I don't tolerate it.
And I have some,
but there's
I have
a lot
some
of people
friends
who
that
do.
Were posting some stuff that are, yeah.
I would deplore that, too.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Because the division, I would argue, is largely coming from your side of the aisle. When you look at the, yeah, I know. You guys are always perplexed by that. Because you don't hear what Joe Biden is saying. You don't hear.
Did he ever call for war?
The harm of, yes, we have had commentators on the left say we are in a war. Once Donald Trump was elected, they used that terminology, that we are in a war with the right. And yes, we need to condemn all of it. And we need to do a better job of looking in the mirror with our parties on what is happening. Because I'm hearing you, and I'm no, and I don't think it's deliberate, but you are not hearing what many on your side of the aisle are saying.
Well,
and you need to do a better job of listening.
I think we do listen a lot.
Yes,
and I think that we I say this unilaterally, right? I mean that we're not unilateral. I would condemn anybody who celebrated this. I would condemn anybody who believes that violence is the right answer. But I also believe that I don't have all the answers, right? I think I have good answers, and I think I have good arguments. But that's not what people are about. And we're seeing it all over. And I'm sure we'll get to the budget, and we'll get to all the stuff that's happening in Harrisburg. We have people who fundamentally believe that the other side is evil, that the other side is wrong, and I don't see that from any of the people that I work with or associate. I didn't see all these things. I don't follow those people. I don't buy into that. And I live my life every single day in the belief that we have to do better.
Yeah.
That this isn't an existential war. Look, there are people who are calling for war today. I look for moral leadership from our leaders to deplore that. I'm not hearing it today. I'm honest with you. I am not hearing it. Back when Minnesota happened, there was no statement. The flags certainly were not at half mast for it. So, you know, I think we need to be consistent. We need to be clear. And we cannot pick and choose what political violence is okay.
Yeah, no political violence should ever be accepted.
All right. We'll take a break in a moment. I assume there is a state capital communications network. Is there such a thing? There is. All right. A lot of chatter since yesterday, should I assume, you know, back and forth?
Well, it happened later in the day. I was out at events all day. So, you know, there's informal networks. I mean, we certainly chat. I haven't actually talked to many folks on the Republican side of the aisle. I'm sure I will today, but I was just tied up with events. I think we're all shocked. You know, we're all horrified. We're all concerned about our personal safety and the safety of those we love and those we care about. But I think even more so, we're really concerned about putting an end to this. You know, how do we turn down the rhetoric? I was really disappointed to see some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, in the other chamber, I will say, who made some remarks that were very inflammatory. And it wasn't just one. It was a couple. You can go on social media and you can see them. I don't think if the tables were reversed, we would be calling the other side evil. I just don't think that. I think that's a rhetoric that I'm very, very disappointed in. And excuse me, and if I do hear that from my colleagues, I would never tolerate it. I would say you're wrong. I would say
Have you really not heard the rhetoric about Donald Trump is Adolf Hitler? You've not heard that?
So I've never bought into that, but there are people who love power more than principle, and yeah. I would argue that he loves power a lot more than principle.
All with Joe Biden, yep. Both parties have And I would argue that actually he has sacrificed a lot of power because he wants to help the American people. So we
no
can
one's
have
ever
that
gotten richer. No one's ever gotten richer in office than he is now.
Joe Biden?
No. Crypto. We'll talk crypto sometime.
Mr. Taycak, you need to do a little more research on your buddy Joe.
Well, in any case,
you might want to check out the Obamas. You might want to check out the Clintons.
None of my colleagues.
Wow.
None of my colleagues.
Yeah.
In the Pennsylvania House. Or in the Pennsylvania Senate, celebrated what happened yesterday. And when Minnesota happened, we did not call the other side evil. We deplored the action. We deplored the viewpoint. We said that it is intolerable that we cannot resolve our differences democratically and peacefully. I think we're very consistent in that. And if you see otherwise, let me know, because I will absolutely disagree with that person. That's not who I am. That's not why I do what I do. And frankly, I came into this late in life. So I came with you know, a lot of experience working with folks who I didn't necessarily agree with. I worry about young people in particular because they don't have a model for that right now. They're certainly not getting a model of that from the top. It's you know what, and you guys have heard me say this before. I think it is absolutely atrocious that we believe that the only way to win is for the other person to lose. That's not the way our system was set up. That's not the way good business happens. It happens on the football field. Somebody wins, somebody loses. That I'll give you. But in politics, in life, in personal relationships, we have to find ways that both sides can win. For me to win doesn't mean you have to lose, and vice versa. We have to figure out a way to work together.
All right, let's take a break right here. All right, local state representative Paul Taycak, our guest. When we come back, we got to ask about Rockview. Why are we still waiting? State budget, why are we still waiting? All right, folks, stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. We will come right back.
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Fox Sports.
Scott Graham here from Westwood One. Don't miss any of our exclusive NFL action all season long until a new champion is crowned at Super Bowl 60. Of course, each week begins with Thursday Night Football. I'll get it started with a preview and a look ahead at the big weekend games. Then it's to the stadium for the play-by-play of all the action. Join us all season long on Thursday Night Football.
The road to Super Bowl 60 starts right here all season long. Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coolest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand Multi-Force stand-ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro,
count on it.
Your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
The Fox State Knowledge.
It's Let's Talk here on a Thursday morning. Jeff Byers and Scott Giese with you. Again, a little open phone time coming up a bit later in the show today.
Local State Representative Paul Takac is our guest. All right, let's go to the things we were originally going to talk about today.
Light before light.
We are still, all right, I don't have any dog directly in this fight. In other words, I don't work at Rockview. I don't have anybody in my family that works at Rockview. But I do not understand, Paul. It's been 4 months. Why are we still waiting for a final decision on what's going to happen with the prison? What can you tell us?
I think we did a really good job of making the case that both Rockview and Kihana should stay open. You know, during that public comment period, myself, my colleagues across the aisle, you know, we had a lot of folks in the community who made really strong arguments that it was a mistake to close those facilities. That the decision, or the recommendation, excuse me, that was originally made needed to be looked at more closely. I'm gratified that they seem to be taking that to heart. They could have made that decision. If there was the perception that it was a done deal, which everybody was saying when the recommendation mm-hmm. first came out, I think we've shown that it was not a done deal or that we undid it. I do know, and I've been in regular communication with the administration, with the Department of Corrections, with others. In fact, just this week, a couple days ago, I had a conversation with Lieutenant Governor again about it and again made the argument that we need to make sure that we keep all or part of Rockview open and that we need to keep the boot camp open. Ultimately, I don't know what they're going to decide. I know the steering committee still continues to meet. I keep sending them information. I keep hearing from the community. And I understand that people are frustrated. Trust me, I can't imagine what that's like. You're starting kids in school. You're trying to figure out jobs. You're trying to do all this kind of stuff. I've said, look, if you want me to stop fighting, I will. But I think in a sense, no news is good news in that they are really taking a look at this. I've tried to argue that there are several options. They could reduce the size, close the oldest building on Rockview, and save two-thirds of the money they were talking about saving. I do know that they're adjusting inmate populations right now, largely in response to staffing issues. There's some folks who have already transferred out, or there's folks who've retired. So, you know, I'm assured that isn't a harbinger of what they're trying to do. It's just rebalancing. And so I'm hopeful.
Do you think, is it a situation where are you getting the sense that if they keep these two open, all right, that means something else somewhere else in the state gets shut down? Or are they looking at the possibility that, no, we have the right numbers, maybe, again, reallocating some things here or there? Or do you get the feeling that they are kind of hell-bent now on, well, something needs to close?
So I think they wish they had the budget to keep everything open. I think they're also looking ahead to seeing, you know, inmate populations are declining. So they're trying to balance, you know, the number of institutions, the amount of staff, which is almost always the largest cost center, if you will. You know, trying to balance all those things in a responsible way while also looking at the programs that they have. You know, corrections is a different animal than it used to be, just locking people in a cage. I mean, there's lots of things that they have to do, from health care and rehabilitation to, you know, the facilities maintenance itself. So I think they are trying to look at how can we be the best, and you guys have heard me say this, we have to be good, responsible stewards of taxpayer money. We have to do that. what is the best way to do that sometimes means you have to make unpopular decisions. Yeah. But I think it also means that you have to take a hard look at whether those decisions are going to be effective and impactful and sustainable. And frankly, I think they chose two of the institutions that are doing an excellent job, and that's a tribute to the people who work there, and that's a tribute to, you know, the history of those facilities. I think they can make a better decision, and I'm hopeful that they will.
Now, you said they earlier. Who is they? Is this the governor's call?
The Department of Corrections. I think the governor will ultimately concur with the Secretary of Corrections, who reports to him. I mean, he's on the team. There's a team of people. You know, there's public safety officials, corrections officials, you know, facilities people on his team. They're the ones who are on the steering committee, who are trying to make this decision. And like I said, I've been in regular contact with them, and they're very receptive. They're listening. They are respectfully listening to all points of view, and hopefully we'll come up with a decision. But at the same time, I my heart just absolutely breaks for these families who are sitting on pins and needles. I understand that, and I wish I had a better answer, but I can tell you I don't have a bad answer right now, and that's somewhat gratifying.
I mean, could this stretch into 26? Is there any kind of timeline out there?
There's no statutory timeline. I think there is a recognition, and they do understand that this is, the longer that this goes, the more stress and the more inconvenience and the more uncertainty it causes. You know, I'm loath to tie it directly to the budget, but, you know, frankly, there's some big fights right now on the budget, and depending on what their budget is, may decide what they can do long term or what they see they can do long term. You know, one of the things is they keep saying that Rockview is the oldest, second oldest prison in the system. One building is, but there's a lot newer parts of that facility. So, you know, it's, again, I think it kind of goes back to this all or nothing thinking.
Yeah.
We need to take a nuanced look at things. And that, you know, that's what I did when I was in business. And, you know, you have to look more deeply than just the surface.
It sounds like you're hinting at like Rockview could be reconfigured, maybe part of what, it, like, is the, it's kind of a two-part question, but I guess is it possible, like in what you're hearing and discussing, that Rockview still exists, at least part of it, as what it currently serves as, but maybe part of it is reworked into something else? Where I'm all about compromise. I'm just trying to envision what a compromise with a prison, either opening or closing, what the compromise there is, and I'm actually encouraged to hear that there might be a compromise, so
well,
I'm not poo-pooing that at all.
I'm not a corrections professional, but I have made the argument when I looked at all the data that they sent back. They said, okay, which facilities and require the most maintenance or require the most capital investment? And much of it is in what they call the A and D block, which is the big monolithic, you know, 1915 building that is you're driving down 26,
yep.
Right? That you don't see what's all behind it.
Yeah.
But that building itself, when you start to parse out these projected savings, I think they talk somewhere in the neighborhood of $75 to $80 million in savings. Well over half of that was just in that building, because, you know, it's old, right? And a lot of people agree that the conditions in there are not ideal. For example, it doesn't have air conditioning. It's cold in the winter, hot in the summer. You know, it's not designed as a modern correctional facility would be. So I've made the suggestion, why not just shut down that building and keep the rest of it open? there's the correctional industries there. There's the forestry camp, the chapel, the education building, a neurocognitive care unit for inmates with dementia and Alzheimer's. There's a lot of specialized treatment programs there. Why can't we take a look at that? And when you look at Kihana, the boot camp, the overhead there is quite low. Your capital savings are not really there, but you're losing the benefit of that program. And I've talked to people who've gone through that program. So again, I think trying to say, okay, there's some things that you can do. And look, Rockview has a ton of land. Everybody thinks it's because of the land. That is, in my mind, a very separate issue from what ends up happening with the institution itself. You could divest the state of all or part of those lands as well for economic development, for recreational opportunities, for preservation. There's a lot there. Let's not tie these things together. Let's not think all or nothing.
All right. Tied to the budget, eh? Okay, let's move on.
I opened the door, didn't I?
Yes, you did. It's called a segue. Very nice. We have joked, maybe we haven't joked, about the June 30 deadline. Oh, yeah, that was back there. Open-ended question. Why don't we have a state budget yet?
Well, I think it goes back to the all-or-nothing thinking. Back in February, the governor proposed a budget that was his ideal budget. It was around $52 million, billion dollars, very big difference. If I'm not mistaken, it was right around there. I don't remember all the details. But we worked through the spring. In fact, the House was there almost all of May and almost all of June working on a budget. Unfortunately, I'm going to say it's a matter of record, the Senate was not. They were only there a couple of weeks. We were working through a budget, and we believe that we came to what we believe was a compromise budget. The House actually passed a budget early part of July. Look, it was never going to pass by June because the political reality is nobody wanted Josh Shapiro to be able to say that he had a budget on time. So that's the political reality of what was happening. But once we passed that deadline, the House, we passed a budget that was a compromise budget. It did not include everything the governor wanted. Frankly, it did not include everything I wanted or any of my other colleagues wanted. It included some of the priorities that we'd been hearing from the Senate that they wanted from our colleagues across the aisle. And we said, this is what we can get 102 plus votes for. And we actually got bipartisan support on it. And we said, okay, now show us what you come back with. And we're still waiting for that. The only answer that has come back, the only thing that apparently they can get 26 votes for in the Senate is their budget with none of the priorities that we had or the governor had. And, frankly, the people of Pennsylvania elected us to do a job. We have a responsibility to work together to come up with a budget that, look, nobody gets everything they want. Everybody gets something that they want. We're fighting for education, for health care. We have some real specific priorities. What are their priorities? Everybody keeps saying we're broke. We have $11 billion in the bank. I understand that we need to grow revenues, but there's opportunities to do that. Apparently, we're just at a standstill because there's a certain number of people in the Senate who believe that they and only they are right, and they're not willing to compromise. That's absolutely my take on it.
All right. Now, the senators are in Harrisburg right now.
Yeah.
All right. House members, you're sitting here. You guys are not. You don't go back for, was it 2 weeks?
We're on an instant recall. If the speaker comes back, in fact, I kind of expected to be in Harrisburg this week because we expected the Senate to be working on a compromise budget. We're not going to accept just their budget. That's just the reality. I don't think we should. I don't think the folks who elected us expect us to just take what we get. We were hoping that they were going to come back with some options. We will be back whenever we need to. That is also what we're talking about in the back channels. We're on a 24-hour recall. If the speaker says we're in tomorrow, we're in tomorrow. I drop everything and I go.
All right. Now, for folks who aren't familiar, what's been on hold, essentially, since June 30th? I know school districts are waiting for money, and they're playing financial games to get their bills paid and all that stuff. What is on hold? Who are the people sitting like, come on, hurry up and do something. We're waiting.
So, fortunately or unfortunately, there are what are deemed essential services that continue to get funded. Corrections is one. Public safety is another. You know, there's certain categories of things that are just continuity of government. We cannot and should not interrupt those. But there's another category that I consider essential, but that do fall through that. Education is one. There's a lot of healthcare and social and human services issues. So the counties right now are really sort of on a thin edge. We cut the ribbon yesterday for Center Care, the new building downtown. I hear from them. I hear from Center Safe. I hear from all of these organizations. We've got some hard deadlines, and if we can't get money from the state, we're already getting cuts from the federal government. If we can't get our money from the state, typically by October 1st, we have to start borrowing money or we have to start letting people off. We have to start shutting down programs. I think it's really interesting, and not to point fingers, in a nearby county, Head Start was starting to close down programs and lay up. And some of my colleagues were like, went into panic mode about, like, how do we find money to keep this open? I'm like, pass the budget. Like, that's the way to do it. That, you know, we shouldn't be trying to find, you know, pots of money underneath, you know, stuff stashed away in books or under pots. You know, we need to do our job. And I'm incredibly frustrated by it. I think politics has inserted itself in a way. I commend our leadership. Look, it wasn't easy to get to that compromise budget. There were a lot of people who wanted more. And there's a lot of people who really felt like they could have dug in their heels. But we have a responsibility to govern. We have to be the adults in the room. When everything else is going crazy, we have to be the ones to make the hard decisions and live with it. And we also have to stand up to those who are intolerant and say, we will not accept this. This is hurting people, and this is who we're here to serve, not ourselves.
All right. Now, you mentioned October 1st deadline.
I didn't say that was a deadline. I said that
a date for where some things start to shut down.
Yeah, and some things are already starting to shut down. Now, but that, October 1st is where the pain really, really starts.
All right. That's 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
Do you expect something to happen in 3 weeks?
I sure hope so. Like I said, I kind of expected to be there today. We're hearing maybe next week. The conversations are ongoing. I don't want you to be under the impression that we're just sort of sitting there staring at each other. Our leadership is talking with their leadership, is talking with the governor's team. I mean, it's a constant dialogue. But the reality is the leadership in the Senate has to come back and say, what can we get 26 votes for that is not just our priorities? There has to be some level of compromise, because otherwise, you know, it's just a refusal to govern. You know, it's an insistence on being right rather than effective. And I think that goes back to the symptomatic of what we were talking about earlier. It's the intolerance, and it's the belief fundamentally that you and only you have all the right answers.
All right, final few minutes with you. Are there any other big topics on your plate right now besides Rockview and the budget? Is there something else kind of, I don't know, hanging out there?
Oh, sure. Always. I mean, I'm always working on things. I mean, it's funny. Everybody thinks, oh, when you're not in Harrisburg, you're not working. Trust me, I'd be happy to show you my calendar. I'm doing a lot of events, focused a lot on economic development, on particularly in rural areas. I'm really proud to say that I was just elected chair of the Rural Population Revitalization Commission, which is an entity that's looking to try and help the 48 of the 67 counties in Pennsylvania that are largely rural and that are losing population, and they're projected to lose population by 2050. So that allows me to have input in influence and focus on everything from healthcare and human services to economic development to just anything, transportation, infrastructure. All of those things are really, I'm passionate about that. I believe that's not a partisan issue. Unfortunately, it's often portrayed as a partisan issue. So I think I have an opportunity to be a real leader in that space. I'm always focused on full and fair funding for education. I think we need to plug some of the holes that are, frankly, literally stealing money from local taxpayers and sending it to unaccountable entities that don't know what to do with all the money and just buy real estate to hide it. I think that's been a focus for me. We're working on some things around compromise around clean fuels and other things. Like, how can we incentivize farmers to capture methane and create biogas and compress natural gas? And, you know, some of those things. How do we address acid mine drainage and also critical minerals that are available? Yeah. So, you know, there's areas of agreement that I think we can do. But you know what? It takes work. It doesn't just happen. You have to lay the groundwork, and you have to talk to everybody. I'm working on a really complex piece of legislation right now. In some ways, it's frustrating because it's taken a very, very long time. But I will tell you, no one can say that they weren't consulted. Or at least no categories. I mean, you know, individuals who say, well, I didn't know about that. But, you know, it's the hard work of governing. But it's also what is sustainable. And I believe ultimately it's what's going to save us.
I hope you're right. I sincerely hope you're right.
Well, we know you have an event you need to get to.
Yes, thank you for your time.
I plan to see you next Saturday. You're doing one of these shredding events.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up.
Go ahead real quick.
Yeah, so we have a couple of events coming up. September 17th, we're doing a license plate restoration event. Many of you might have chipped or peeling or illegible license plates. Come by the Bull Mansion. It's in the evening. I think it's 4 to 6. Please don't quote me on that. Go to my website. But definitely come by there. Free replacement. We'll have everything there for you to do it. On the 20th, Saturday from 9 to noon, we'll be at the Center County Transfer Station. We'll be doing a paper shredding event and a pet supplies collection drive. Last year, we collected tons of stuff, two big truckloads full. So,
love it.
So bring your personal identifiable information and bring some stuff for the dogs and cats and other animals in your life, and look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, I've got old paperwork from my old job that I simply don't need anymore in my basement. So
no one does, and it could be a liability. And by the way, you don't have to take out staples. There's no limits. I mean, literally, fill up a trailer and bring it. We'd be thrilled.
Well, that's what I did. I did it with you. Now, Carrie Benninghoff had a similar event back in the spring, and yeah, I filled up my car. Now, here's one thing. Carrie was there. T-shirt, he's sweating that day. He's toting boxes. Is that what you're going to do?
I have stood in the rain at those things. I stand out in the middle. I direct traffic. I lift boxes. We actually did a satellite one up in Snowshoe where we took the thing up there so people didn't have to drive off the mountaintop. And oh boy, I mean, I know how to work. I know how to.
All right.
I know how to lift.
Okay. Now, the license plate event, real quick, I've got a note. It says Bollesburg Military Museum.
Yes, I'm sorry, Bollesburg Military Museum.
On the 17th.
The 17th,
so
right.
Next Wednesday.
Wednesday, correct.
So another, and people would get one of those spiffy new.
Yeah, it's one of the Liberty Bell plates. Yep, free of charge. And if you already have a personalized plate, we get the personalized plate, we just, you know, have to do a little bit of different paperwork. So, yeah, absolutely. Come by. We're always here to help. And by the way, call my office any day. I mean, we are there to help with PennDOT issues. We're there to help with any sort of state agencies or programs, questions, anything. I mean, I have an amazing team. I'm really fortunate, and they're very committed to the community.
We appreciate your time this morning.
Very much.
Thank you guys for all you do.
Thank you very much.